You are listening to the Vibrant Visionaries podcast, hosted by me, Heidi Bennett. Welcome, old friends and new listeners. What is Vibrant Visionaries all about? Well, this is how I describe a vibrant visionary. They're a creator skilled in a variety of disciplines who combine their many talents to bring the world innovative, groundbreaking, culturally impactful art and entertainment. They're curious, overflowing with a million ideas, a lifelong learner, tinkerer, and experimenter. They're compassionate, empathetic, emotionally intelligent, usually a little sensitive, and always abundantly hilarious. They understand the value of vulnerability when it comes to telling original stories and creating a compelling, thought-provoking body of work. Simply put, a vibrant visionary is my type of weirdo. These are the people I love having on the podcast and our relatively new YouTube channel. So if this all sounds good to you, and maybe you even identify as a vibrant visionary, I invite you to check out all of our podcasts on vibrantvisionaries.com and pop over to the YouTube channel, Vibrant Visionaries Network, if you're interested in seeing the beautiful faces of a lot of the folks that I've been interviewing lately. I also have the Vibrant Kitchen there, where I teach simple recipes, really lightning fast and packed with flavor. I also share some of my vintage cookbooks and eclectic destinations, favorite gadgets, etc. So that's where you can find me. Now on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Vibrant Visionaries. My name's Heidi Bennett, and I've already drooled on myself here in excitement, but moisture, that's something that will come up in this conversation with Allison Walter and Sam Britton behind the amazing film that just will not stay out of my mind, which is Tearsucker. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So, oh my gosh, how do we talk about this movie? I was thinking it's so visceral and so much vulnerability in this film. As our lead, Allison, and then Sam, you wrote it, and your character, you know, uses vulnerability in such an interesting way. And so the word vulnerable, just obviously, it's a big part of the story and the big part of a theme of the film, but also something you have to deal with, I'm sure, in making the film. So I don't know, just using the word vulnerability as a jumping off point, how did it that theme play into actually the making of the film?
So I think, to me, I was working on a different script that I wanted to make with kind of the same group of people, and it just didn't feel right. And then I, you know, through a series of events, came on the idea for this one. And right away, I thought what was most interesting about it to me is how terrifying it is to me personally. The idea that someone would take all the things that you know about them when they've been the most vulnerable and the most open and raw and honest and shown you like the deepest parts of themselves, which is usually where trauma reaches into, like the deepest parts of you. That's where it hides. That's where it comes from. The idea that someone could take that and use that against you is truly terrifying to me, because you know, you see, like, Allison watches cult documentaries all the time. You see how people that are good at that, at finding your buttons, at getting in there, they can manipulate people and get them to do crazy things, get them to hurt themselves, get them to hurt other people, you know, just have a hold over them and wrap them around their finger and get them to do whatever they want for their own personal gain. And that's a very terrifying idea to me, because I think we're all on some level afraid that by being vulnerable with people, that somehow we're going to end up getting hurt. And I think that, you know, this kind of gets at that common fear that we all have. And as people, you know, we have to like fight through that and trust someone. So to me, like I said, a truly terrifying thing was the idea that someone would violate that trust and use your own vulnerability against you. So that's a lot of, I think, what I was thinking about when I was coming up with the story and the relationship and trying to depict the emotional abuse that her character goes through in a way that was, you know, at times over the top for effect, but also at times that I think that I wanted it to feel realistic in a way that people could see, oh, there's elements of this in a relationship that I had, or I know somebody who, you know, not is not having the tears licked off their face, but metaphorically speaking, yes. So I think that's kind of my comment on vulnerability.
Yeah. And I think in regards to the actual, you know, process and making of the film, it's interesting that you brought that word up, because I think that was like the key word on set for all of us, because we were very lucky to, one, shoot with mostly a group of friends, you know, and a very small crew. We had 12 people, maybe. So a really small, intimate group on set. And then for anyone that doesn't know, Sam and I had already been in a relationship for almost a couple of years at that point. So we are very comfortable with each other. And we also had acted together before, which was important because aside from the fact that it was during COVID and he's licking my face, you know, there was such a deep level of vulnerability required for this role. And even for me, who has, you know, done roles where I've had to cry and things like that before, I don't even really think of this as like crying. It's almost just like vomiting your emotions out. You know, it was such like there was the snot and all the things going on. So to feel comfortable going to that place, it was really nice that I was with my partner who I felt so safe with. And if you've seen the movie, in real life, Sam is nothing like that. He's incredibly empathetic and kind.
Thank you for saying that.
You are. And so, you know, there was some comedy of, you know, he'd be in these awful scenes and then we'd cut and he'd be comforting me and very sweet. But I felt like the safety of being in a healthy relationship actually allowed me to go to the place to portray such a terribly unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, I was thinking, speaking of comedy, there's also great comedy throughout this, which I think, you know, it just helps us all when you get movies that are so scary and yes, you maybe bringing up some personal trauma or yes, things that we can relate to. And I don't think I know any woman that's, you know, maybe dates men or has been approached by men for dating or whatever otherwise, this is a heightened version, but hasn't experienced some level of something like this. I really appreciated the comedy and I loved the, you know, the Zoom work thing. Cause I think even like post COVID, we can all now, that's just a solidified universal thing that we all relate to, is these awkward group, or like I remember we did a few family, you know, okay, we can't get together for Thanksgiving, so let's try to all talk in this big huge thing, and you know, different people talking over each other and all that. To me, that can be like a nightmare. And I think somebody even posted in the chat film fest like Discord, like that was one of the scariest things, was just seeing
being in an awkward Zoom call. It's horrifying.
You know, I didn't want to make this a pandemic movie, but I think as a filmmaker at this point, if you're being honest, we've all changed so much from the pandemic. And there's so much of that, like, you know, some things are apparent now, some things probably affected us that'll stay with us for a while. And I just thought writing this, I wanted as much of like real life now that we are all experiencing and how we've all changed to kind of be baked in there. So like, you know, I was thinking about how much I hate the boxes and trying to pay attention to one person talking when there's like somebody in the bottom corner clearly like doing something else. And so that's all baked in there. And, you know, a lot of the isolation that everyone had to go through, I think that's definitely baked in there, because I know that's something that I personally struggled with. It was just, you know, me and my dog at that point before Allison and I got together. And I just think that, you know, when you're truly alone and when you're separated from everyone, that's when all of the bad stuff really starts percolating in your head and you can think too much. And I think there's also an added layer of vulnerability, to get back to what you're talking about earlier, when you've been isolated, which is why so many abusers and cult leaders, for that matter, one of the first things they do is they try and their victims, they try and separate them from their support group. They try and isolate them as much as possible, because that's a more immediate vulnerability and a more immediate dependency. And I think all of that, like some of it deliberately ended up in the script. And I think some of it just ended up as a part of, you know, like I said, the world's changed since the pandemic and we're all affected by it. So I thought I didn't want to try and ignore any of that. I wanted to try and funnel that all into the script to try and make it, again, feel as real and relatable as possible while there's still all of the craziness and the, you know, heightened things and the crazy zooms of the mouth. And thank you for saying that you appreciated the humor and you thought it was funny, because that was something that Steven and I especially worked really hard on, is we felt like our favorite movies, they flex and release and they grab you and they let you go. And because of that, you're able to, you know, make it through the whole thing and stay engaged. And we didn't want there to be a point where it got to be too much for people, or we just beat you down and then you can't emotionally engage. Cause for us, the whole point is to stay with her until the end and to like stay in it. And at some point, if it's too much and you have to check out, then I think you're missing out on the experience. So it was really important for us to try and find beats wherever we could to make everybody laugh or giggle, or at least just kind of let go for a second. And, you know, that's where we're partly so grateful for Matt. Matt's wonderful performance.
He's Mark.
As the Mark character.
Yeah,
every time we've shown the film, when his character is on there, there's relaxed points where people laugh because he's so lovable and so relatable. And he has this kind of silly, goofy, like, okay, I guess we'll go kind of energy. And he plays that character so well as someone that's kind of goofy, but is also so loyal to his partner. And I think, you know, that's also like, that's the person we all want to be with, is somebody that just goes, all right, let's go. Whatever you need, whatever I can do to help.
I don't always say all right to him.
But... Yeah. And we're so grateful for his performance, because he provides much needed levity and fun in the moments in the film where like we really need it the most, to make sure that we don't lose any audience members on the way from the beginning to the end, because, you know, it gets a little rough at times. And depending on who you are and your own personal experience, people we've talked to that have watched it, a lot of what people have been through, they bring to the film. Like, you know, with any art, you kind of view it through the lens of your personal experience. So I know for some people, like there's things at the beginning that hit pretty hard, and we want to make sure that we let people have moments to go laugh, you know, giggle, kind of groan, and then get back on track.
I was going to say about the comedy aspect, it's been really interesting. We've been doing these kind of screenings at different independent theaters around the U.S. And it's so, we have no idea when we walk into the theater what kind of audience we're going to get. And sometimes, like at Chattanooga, it's people, you know, groaning and cheering and yelling at the screen and yelling at the characters and clapping. And then other times it is, you could drop a pin. It is silent. People are literally sitting. I mean, we're like sitting in the back of the theater watching people, and people are on the edge of their seat, but no one makes a sound the whole movie, except for consistently when Matt's on, people will laugh.
Yeah.
But afterwards in the talkbacks, it's like everyone's engaged and experiencing the film just in a very different way. But there's something infectious about watching it with the group and what the rest of the group is feeling with you. And we've had people say they watched it in a theater and then watched it alone and had completely different viewing experiences. Cause the comedy, I think, comes when you can, as a group, collectively go, this guy is ridiculous. This is insane. And you can start to like laugh at the caricature of what we're trying to say, but then be sucked back into the drama of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, that like the overtop, I mean, we all know, you're licking faces. You've mentioned it. The tear sucker thing is like, it is like, I can laugh during that and also be kind of, you know, gooked out about it too. And yeah, of course, and then also be thinking at the same time, like, what is it like for you guys to, you know, be partners and do things, and then to play a role where you're this persona that, I mean, I have... Yes, I haven't had somebody lick my face like that. But I mean, we've all met or briefly dated or something, been touched by these people where you're like, oh, they are looking into my eyes. They are telling me the things I want to hear. I'd love to talk a little bit about that too, because I think it's like there's cult leaders, but then there's also people I think are like sincere influencers or writers or self-help guru people that... I mean, there's all of those, right? There's like cult leaders that are just pure. They know from the get what they're doing, and then there's people who I, you know, kind of morph towards that. Or me, I'll say I coached professional creatives for many years, and there's a lot of things I learned out on how to market myself or sell that as like to bring in my vulnerability or to, you know, as a sales technique, and then to use techniques in self-help or those circles of, personal work that are represented in the movie and in our lives, that you can see, you can sit there and see how being vulnerable is also, it can be both wonderful and healing and manipulative and gaslighty, or a way that you can start to not trust your own thoughts or whatever. I don't know. All of that is there. But what was I going to say?
You're talking about like a thing that keeps coming up for us is sort of this like weaponized therapy speak, like things that could be used for good against people. So like these are concepts that could help a lot of people. And even, you know, part of how Sam came up with this idea is we were, you only been dating for a little while and we were watching a film together, and he didn't know about something specific in my past that was triggering for me. And it came on in the movie, and he had been so excited to show me this movie. And I just started crying, and he felt so terrible, started trying to comfort me, and said to me, you know, I'm so glad I know this about you now, because now, you know, if something comes up, I can, you know, try to, you know, fast forward or talk, we can talk about it. And like using knowledge for good versus bad. And that was part of how he thought all of a sudden, wait, what if someone took the same information and use it against someone? That's, you know, the short version of the story. But I think that people do this all the time, whether it's as, you know, obvious or abusive as this movie, well, oftentimes not. But I think in relationships, people are keeping a tally of the things that they know will hurt another person often. And I know I've, you know, experienced even sometimes in friendships where people start to kind of use something against you. But I think now in this new age of self-help and therapy and all these things that can be so wonderful for people, there is a whole new set of weapons that men can use to gaslight women. Also women to gaslight men. We've had men really relate to this movie who've been through abusive relationships. But I think it's interesting to look at the role the internet plays in that, and, you know, self-help, like you said, influencers, there's just a wide gamut of, you know, new, I guess, tools if you wanted to manipulate someone.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm so glad you brought up vulnerability, because this all comes back to that again. It's people who are being vulnerable and putting their trust in someone, whether it's a YouTube pseudo therapist or like an actual trained person. You're putting your trust that they're going to use what they know about you responsibly and not use it to manipulate you. And that's a huge leap of trust. And unfortunately, you know, as they say in all the Spider-Man comics and the movies and everything else, with great power comes great responsibility. And not everyone is responsible. Like, some people are easily corrupted by power. They get a little bit of it, they want more. Or there's other people that already, you know that that's what they are, is they get off on having power over someone else. So whether it's just someone that does that in relationships, they have a sort of like victim seeking kind of thing they do, where they deliberately find people that they can then twist and push around, or whether it's someone that's in a position that maybe didn't intend to do that, but once they get the feeling of knowing someone's stuff and being able to do things, it leads them down a darker path. I'm just reminded of the great documentary from the Chattanooga Film Fest, Satanic Panic. I don't know if you've watched that, but it was Satan Wants You. Yeah. About the Satanic Panic. And it was, it was so good. And part of the core of it is the relationship between the therapist and this woman, where it seemed evident throughout hand that he was implanting false memories and other things. And, you know, we're both the most pro therapy of anyone. I think everyone can use someone to talk to, everyone can use someone to listen. Like, therapy has been so beneficial to both of us. So I'm not shit talking therapy. I'm just saying that sometimes when people are put in a position of power, even if they've never been the kind of person that would abuse that position before, sometimes I think it's just too much for people, or they like the feeling of being able to control someone. And I think that's what's so scary about putting your trust in someone else and really opening up and being vulnerable, or you know, sharing things about yourself that really do put you in a position where like someone could get you to do a lot of things. They could convince you to drive out to the desert, for example, when you just met somebody.
You're ignoring a lot of
things. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Something that's come up is a few people have questioned how many red flags she ignores. And I think that I have certainly ignored red flags in moments in my life. I have lots of friends who I sit there and watch ignore red flag after red flag. And when you're inside of it, it's so much harder to see. And I think we wanted to portray that and give credit to that. And I think the gaslighting stuff is interesting because I think people who, like, you know, we premiered at Chattanooga, which is primarily a genre festival and a lot of horror films. And a lot of people who watch horror are used to seeing actual torture in movies. And I think emotional abuse is like a slow burning form of torture. To me, I always think of the analogy of like the waterboarding, which is one little drop at a time on the head, where it's no one's actually getting violently hurt, but you're slowly starting to question everything and slowly going crazy. And I think that it was interesting because a lot of people who can sit there and watch a head getting sliced off and are unfazed were really uncomfortable with it. And I think it makes us sit with the idea that as a society, we look at physical abuse as something very different than emotional abuse. And emotional abuse often isn't given the same weight. And I think to us, it was important to explore that, you know, in one moment, you know, he hurts me a little bit, but for the most of the movie, he never physically hurts me, which is pretty different.
Well, and I think it's because he's realized that that's not the right way to go. That's not the most effective way to get what he wants. It's not the kind of tears that he wants. And also, like Allison said, I think emotional abuse isn't often treated with the same seriousness that physical abuse is, just because you can't see it. Like physical abuse, you see the bruises, you see the broken bones, you see the scars. You can't see emotional abuse. You can't see all the wreckage that it's done inside, which again, to me, makes it almost scarier, because, you know, with a bruise or with a broken spot on your arm, like, you know what you have to fix. You know it's there. You know the hurt is there. You see the wounds. Like, that's, you can put your attention there to fix it. But like, it, when people are emotionally scarred, that's somewhere in here. We can't just look at ourselves in the mirror and go, oh, that's what's causing the problems. That's what I should like try and work on. It's like deep in there, and it's harder to see. And I think that makes it harder to fix. And also, you know, you can feel like you're fine, and then something can pop up and you're like, man, 5 years later, and like, I thought that I was over this, and I saw something, you know. I was in a really weird, I grew up in Minnesota, and, you know, a lot of times our roads are not great. And I had a really bizarre car accident where like, I was totally fine. And my car was totally fine. It like 360'd through three lanes onto the side. And like, there wasn't even a scratch on it. And I thought it was fine. And then like a month later, one day, I just broke down and I couldn't drive for like 2 months. And I didn't realize that all of that was in there, but it was. And, you know, like, you can't see it. And that's so scary. So I think that was, you know, as Allison said, another thing that was important to us about this movie, and an important thing for us to talk about, because emotional abuse survivors have really, really been through a lot, and their scars are not visible like people that have been through physical abuse, but it's just as horrific. It's just as traumatizing, and I, you know, think it should be treated with the same seriousness. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And also, yeah, actually, the current way of describing it as a like as a crime is coercive control, and that slowly over time, people are working on getting that into an offense that can be
Something you should be prosecuted for. Absolutely.
It's another thing, too, where when besides that, yeah, you know, maybe can't see the physical wound or whatever, is that it also takes that emotional fortitude and continued vulnerability to advocate for yourself and work on it. So let's wrap up with just talking a little bit about what's going on next.
Great. Yeah, so right now it's available to buy or to rent on all of the places that you would buy or rent movies. you know, Amazon, Apple, Google, it's available video on demand, all the cable providers. We are also expanding internationally, so that it should be available if you're in another country. We have it coming out internationally. There'll be more details about that in the near future. And I think the thing we've been most excited about lately is we've been doing a pop-up tour in all the little beloved indie theaters across the country, because, you know, I feel like our film plays really well with a live audience where everyone can feel everybody else's energy experiencing the movie and laughing and groaning. And so we've been fortunate in that we've been able to find independent theaters that are interested in, you know, doing pop-up screenings with us. So we go to town, we screen the movie, we stay around to meet everybody and, you know, do a Q&A and talk. And that's been awesome. So I think hopefully
it's been super fun. It's all been, you know, really cool theaters that have great like cinephile members who are film nerds and want to talk, you know, movie nerd stuff. And it's been a blast.
Yeah. So we've done a couple of those already. We're going to, I think, pause until probably January, and then we'll do a couple more cities. And, you know, if anybody's listening and you have a great independent theater, or watching and you have a great independent theater where you live that shows, you know, indie movies and interesting artsy weird stuff like ours, you know, let us know where you are and what the theater is, and maybe we'll do a pop-up there.
Yeah. So the best way to do that, to let us know, our Instagram and Twitter are both Tearsucker Movie. We also have a Facebook page. We're pretty active on there. I check it most of the time. So feel free to shoot us a message. Also, if you watch the movie and you have thoughts or questions, like, we're very the kind of people that like to talk about this stuff. So feel free to reach out, and we'd love to hear if you have indie theaters. Yeah. Currently we're looking at possibly Chicago, maybe one in the Northeast, and something maybe in the Southeast. So if you have any ideas of cool places, let us know. But we're just excited to share it with more people. And we've met so many great people, and the conversations have been so fun. Yeah. But that's what's driving us to continue doing these, is that's part of why we make movies, is to meet other creatives. And like you said, other, you know, vibrant visionaries. But we love your, when I messaged you in the beginning, cause I read your mission statement, and I was like, this is our kind of people.
One of my good friends, our thing is we go to movies and then we immediately talk about them afterwards. And my favorite movies are the ones where we have a lot to talk about, where we want to break it down and analyze it and talk about what we felt and what we went through. And like, I just saw a Dream Scenario yesterday, which was so fun. And we just immediately went to the closest bar around the corner so we could dig into it and talk about it. And those are my favorite movies to watch. And I think those are the kind of movies that I like to make. So hopefully Tearsucker does that for people and gives them something to talk about, whether it's, you know, something
whether they
about,
love it or they hate it.
Yeah. Or, you know, about the filmmaking and, you know, that part of it, or whether it's a vehicle to be able to talk about something more personal and honest, you know? Yeah. And I think that's really valuable, and I enjoy that. So I hope that people get to have that experience with our movie.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both so much for being on the podcast and the YouTube on Vibrant Visionaries. It was really fun to talk with you. It took a lot of planning between us back and forth, and I'm glad that we were able to make it happen.
You've been so supportive and nice, and we really, really appreciate you having us on and, you know, helping us to get the word out about our little indie film. So thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Yeah, it's so great to meet you. Thank you for having us.
Likewise. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching Vibrant Visionaries. This is Heidi Bennett, and ciao for now.